Have you ever been dealing with a difficult situation or working through a challenging task and you're not sure you're being noticed or appreciated? I'm sure we've all been there. I know I've been there. This can be very frustrating. It can be discouraging. And yet sometimes when you least expect it, someone says something or does something that encourages you. It's uplifting. It spurs you onward, and it gives you strength. Sometimes a little encouragement goes a long way to helping us see through these situations, to get things done. And yet, despite this, how easy it is to be encouraging, it's rare. Ask most people, not even here at church, but in life in general, if they feel either overappreciated in life or underappreciated in life. And I'll bet they'll probably say what? Probably underappreciated. Encouragement doesn't cost you anything to give, but its value is absolutely everything to those who receive it. And yet, knowing that, do we do it enough? Maybe not. But we should. Encouragement is an important part of the Christian character, and we must make it our practice. Encouragement must be our practice. Now, for clarity, I'm not talking about practicing as in practicing the piano, which is something I should do. I'm not good at it. I should be better at it. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about practice as in a dentist has a practice. They're doing dentistry because they're good at it. We hope they are. It's their practice. It's something they do every day, and it is part of the definition of who they are. Dentistry is their practice. And the Bible has many examples of encouragement and encouraging people. And these examples show how encouragement is one of the highest duties of being a Christian. It should be part of their practice. One of the most noted individuals in the Bible for their encouragement is Barnabas. Big surprise there, right? His name literally means son of encouragement. And the life of Barnabas is full of examples of how he encouraged others and let his positive and supportive attitude lift people up. One of those examples is in Acts 9 and verse 26, where we read about Paul arriving in Jerusalem soon after his conversion. At this time, he's known as Saul, and the disciples in Jerusalem are terrified of this man. They are literally terrified of him. Before his conversion, Paul had done everything in his power to destroy the church, and you can read about that in Acts 9, verses 1 through 2. It's no wonder they questioned the validity of Paul's profession of faith. As a devout Pharisee, he had doggedly hunted down and persecuted followers of Christ, and this could have been just another one of his tricks. So let's turn over to Acts chapter 9. Acts chapter 9 and verse 26. Acts chapter 9 and verse 26 reads, "And when Saul had come to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him. And he did not believe, and they did not believe that he was a disciple. But Barnabas took him, Paul, and brought him to the apostles, and he declared to them how he had seen the Lord on the road, and that he had spoken to him, and how he had preached boldly at Damascus in the name of Jesus." So here I think we see the encouraging attitude of Barnabas at work in multiple directions. And if we dare to read between the lines a little bit, we may see Barnabas showing first encouragement to Paul. Paul was a changed man. He wanted to join the group. He wanted to be part of them, the disciples, and he wanted to be in contact with them. And he was being rejected. I'm sure the disciples' reception their rejection of him, was just another reminder to Paul of what he'd done. Due to their suspicion, it seemed like Paul's ministry was going to flounder before it ever got off the ground. And that might have happened had not Barnabas stood in the gap beside Paul, leading him to the apostles and testifying concerning his conversion and subsequent ministry. What an encouraging action on the part of Barnabas. And at the same time, Barnabas was encouraging to the disciples. Don't be afraid. Accept him. He was encouraging to them, and in no small part, I think, due to Barnabas' efforts, they responded favorably. Barnabas provided the timely encouragement that Paul needed to launch his ministry and also to the disciples to accept Paul and overcome their fear of him. And then later, Barnabas shows his encouraging attitude in Acts chapter 11, where Barnabas is sent to Antioch. You don't have to turn there, I'll just read it. But in Acts chapter 11 and verse 22, it says, "The news of these things," which are in the verses before, "came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem, and they sent Barnabas as far as Antioch. And when he came and had seen the grace of God, he was glad and encouraged them all that with purpose of heart they should continue with the Lord." This responsibility of encouragement, this practice that we need to have, it's for all of us. It doesn't exclude any of us. And many times, thanks or praise or a cheerful word has kept a person on their feet and lent the strength to help us keep going. Acts of encouragement, they don't have to be monumental things. Small gestures can be powerfully encouraging as well. Doing a good turn for someone can be extremely encouraging, particularly when that person has a real need. The little things we do are often our greatest achievements. A phone call to a friend. "Hey, I just didn't see you at church today. Is everything okay?" Giving someone a ride to church. Sharing a meal with someone. Even if they don't necessarily need food, just sharing a meal with them, talking to them. All these things belong in the catalog of little encouraging actions. These are easy acts of encouragement that can become part of our practice. Sometimes the most encouraging actions are not even anything you say. Sometimes just being there for another person can be powerful encouragement. A presence can be a great comfort for anyone, whether sharing in joys or just comforting in sorrows. Paul recognized the importance of being an example of encouragement, and he reminded the Thessalonians of this example as well. And in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, you can read in verses 11 through 12, he says, "For you know we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory." We need to be building this practice. There are many ways to do this. We can demonstrate encouragement and appreciation daily, and not just with church people. We can do it at work. We can do it at school. You can do it by smiling, hugging, waving, shaking hands, a pat on the back. Words like "thank you," "good job," "well done." Don't forget actions like giving a thoughtful gift. It doesn't have to be monetary. Inviting someone to lunch. If you manage people or you have teams, honor a coworker or an employee. Things like that are very powerful. You know, some of us may never be called to preach or teach or work in the ministry. These things are very visible, and they're good. There's nothing wrong with that. God's work for some of us may be to be that of an encourager. And again, not just to the brethren in the faith. It may be as simple as stepping out of our comfort zone to be a friend, to give a smile, or to give a handshake. Some of these actions may not be seen by many people, but they are valuable. Encouraging words, I'd like to give a little observation about what encouraging words are. They can be given at any time, in all places, and under all circumstances. Encouraging words are lighter than a laptop. You know, they're easier to carry around. They're more portable than a phone. You can never have them lost. They'll never be stolen, and you'll never leave them at home. They cost you nothing. And no matter how bad your financial situation is, you can still hand them out lavishly. Encouraging words are never in limited supply, unlike milk, eggs, and bread right now. And for those on the webcast, there's a storm coming, and it's a thing that happens at grocery stores. There are no adverse side effects of giving out encouraging words, but I will warn you, they are habit forming. And finally, encouragement yields a very high rate of return, much better than any AI stock right now. I'll share a story, not one of my own. In the latter years of his life, C.S. Lewis had a really remarkable correspondence with an anonymous woman from the United States. In his letters, Lewis urged the woman to deal with a life in her life in a way that was emotionally honest, acknowledging grief and fear and anger openly. He warned her about the danger of allowing anger and fear to drive her away from God. His letters referred often to the suffering and difficulty of dealing with abrasive people. And he wrote regularly to her about prayer and its place in the spiritual life. And in all these letters, there are three themes that continued to surface. Honestly dealing with your emotional state, responding graciously to trials, trying people, and being diligent in your prayer life. And these letters are all fascinating to read. You could probably have several sermonettes just on the content of these letters. But what's really striking in the context of what I'm talking about is the fact that Lewis bothered to write these letters at all. Later in his life, he confessed to being often overwhelmed with his workload. And by this time in his life that he was writing these letters, he could hardly write himself because of rheumatic pain in his arm. Yet he noted that why he continued to write the correspondence was, quote, he believed that taking time out to advise or encourage another Christian was both a humbling of one's talent before the Lord and also as much the work of the Holy Spirit as producing a book. That's how important he felt it was. And being a source of encouragement to a fellow Christian was as meaningful to him as anything else he did. And if you know anything about C.S. Lewis, he did a lot. His example demonstrates the enormous value of spiritual encouragement, of giving generously and freely to those who may have little or nothing to give in return. I will share this personally. I've had the pleasure in the recent months of surviving my fourth round of layoffs at work. Hooray! I've been congratulated for my continued employment, and I do genuinely appreciate it. I'm very grateful for it. But also, I know a lot of people who aren't working right now. I know a lot of people who are struggling in the church and outside the church. Encouragement is something we all need and something we all need to give. There's no such thing as an encouragement surplus. It's always a good time to practice encouragement and to give it to those who need it. While the world may be full of discouragement, we're supposed to stand out from the world, showing our Christian examples as we encourage others. Paul instructed the church to continue in their practices of, quote, encouraging one another and edifying one another. We must practice our encouragement and use it to build each other up, to hold each other up. Encouragement is part of the glue that holds a church and a congregation together. As we see in biblical examples, encouragement is part of the spiritual character that we need to all strive to have. And there may be a time in the future, maybe not so distant, where all we have to offer each other is encouragement. So let's make encouragement our practice.